So everything I'm speaking about today is joint width constants reach. Okay, so I'll just say a few words about the starting point for our work. So Gell-von Settlin polytopes are a very nice and famous family of polytopes that can be described in two different ways. So one, their lattice points index a basis of the highest weight representations, V lambda. That's one way to think about them. And two is their inequalities can be obtained by tropicalizing geometric crystals. This was an observation of Bernstein and Kajdan. And so these are kind of two dual ways to think about Gell-von Settlin polytopes. And what we wanted to do was figure out what was the appropriate analog of this statement for Grassmannians, and in particular, the cluster charts for the Grassmannian. So I'll now start talking about the Grassmannian. And by the end, you'll see some kind of analog of the statement. Okay, so the Grassmannian GRK of CN is the set of all vector spaces in CN of dimension K. We're going to represent elements of the Grassmannian by full rank K by N matrices, say M, where if I have such a matrix, the rows together span a K-plane. Now I'll remind you of what Pluhar coordinates are. So if capital I is a K-element subset of the numbers 1 through n, then p sub I of m is equal to the determinant of the k by k submatrix of m, which is picked out by the columns I. So this p sub I of m is called a Pluhar coordinate. And if I look at all of them together, I get an embedding of the Grassmannian. So so this gives a way to embed the Grassmannian into projective space of dimension n choose k minus 1, where I map a matrix representing a k-plane to the tuple of all of its Pluhar coordinates. Okay, so now let me give a kind of an outline of all the players in this story. So there's going to be a kind of, let's see, how much space should I give myself? Maybe I will okay, so I'm going to use these two columns. In the terminology mirror symmetry, the two sides of the duality might be called A model and B model. On the A model side, I have the Grassmannian of n minus k planes in Cn. And over here, I fix a particular favorite ample divisor, D, which is the locus where the Pluhar coordinate p sub 1, 2, dot, 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 n minus k vanishes. So this is contained in X. Okay, and then on the B model side, I have what they often call a Landau-Ginzburg model. And so what is X check? X check is going to be the complement of an anti-canonical divisor in, now, this dual Grassmannian of K planes in CN space. And specifically, what we're doing in building X check is we're going to remove the locus where any P sub J vanishes, where J is cyclically consecutive, where J, a cyclically consecutive subset of 1 through n. Just out of curiosity, how many people here are familiar with the cluster algebras in general? A bit. Cluster structure on the Grassmannian? If you've seen the cluster algebra on the Grassmannian, then these cyclically consecutive Pflücker coordinates are precisely the frozen variables. But anyway, I'm not going to assume that knowledge. Okay, and then also on this side we have a particular function called the superpotential, which maps X check to C of Q, which was written down very explicitly by Robert Marsh and Connie Reach. And I'll say subsequently exactly what it is. So roughly speaking, basically what we have on our two sides are our dual Grassmannians. I'm going to set capital N to be K times N minus K, which is the dimension of, which equals both the dimension of X and of X check. Okay, now we have Pflücker coordinates on both sides. Pflücker coordinates on this side are N minus K element subsets of 1 through N, and Pflücker coordinates on this side are K element subsets of 1 through N, and I'd like to have a way to identify them easily. So I'm going to index both sides by partitions. So over here, we have Pflücker coordinates, P sub J, for J and an N minus K element subset of 1 through N. And over here, we have Pflücker coordinates, say P sub I, for I, a K element subset of 1 through N. And what we prefer to do index Pflücker coordinates on both sides by partitions lambda, which are contained in a n minus k by k rectangle. So let me draw a little picture here. So this is n minus k on this side. This is k on this side. And this, you should imagine, is a lattice path with unit steps. The total length is n. And if, and what I've just drawn is a, this is a partition. And over here, I'm trying to get a Pflücker coordinate, so I can identify this partition with the, so if I label each of the unit steps, then on this side I can identify my partition with the labels of the vertical steps, and on this side I can identify my partition with the labels of the horizontal steps, and so it indexes a Pflücker coordinate on both sides. So J vertical steps, and my I here corresponds to horizontal steps. Okay, all right, I guess I need to continue my columns. So, okay, so, all right, so now we're going to use certain combinatorial gadgets, certain planar bipartite graphs on a disk, to understand both sides of the picture. So we're going to, so let me make my columns again. A model versus B model. So for both sides, something that we do on both sides is we're going to fix a Playbic graph of type k, n. So this is a graph that looks something like this. And I'm going to define them carefully in a moment. And there's two things that you can do with this Playbic graph. You can get a sort of network chart for x, and you can also get a cluster chart for x check. So there's sort of two different maps you can get out of the same Playbic graph. And if you've thought about cluster varieties, then one of them is a cluster A structure and one is a cluster X structure. Okay, so on this side, we'll use this to define what I'll call a network chart. Oh, let me call this Playbic graph G, phi G, from C star to the N to X. So this is kind of a cluster X variety structure. And on this side, we have a cluster chart, which I'll call phi G check, from C star to the N X check, and this is a cluster A variety structure. And now we're going to do two rather different things on the two sides. So on the left-hand side, on the A model side, we're going to look at a corresponding convex body, which is called a Newton-Okunkov body, delta G. And for now, so I'm going to define it momentarily, but for now, so Newton-Okunkov body has the wonderful abbreviation nobody. Now, the way to think about it is that nobody has the same relation to an arbitrary variety as the moment polytope does to a toric variety. Grassmannians are somehow sort of a next simplest kind of variety after toric variety. So this is a convex body that we're going to get on the A model side, and our convex body delta G will be actually a convex polytope defined as a convex hull. Okay, so now what do we do on the B model side? Now we're going to use this superpotential, and we're going to write our superpotential in terms of the particular cluster chart, phi g check, and tropicalize it. After we write our superpotential in terms of phi g check, we're going to get a Laurent polynomial, and there's a kind of natural way to tropicalize a Laurent polynomial and get a polytope. So this gives a polytope, k QG defined by inequalities. And this QG is a bit related to geometric crystals. So let's see, one more thing I'll say over here is that lattice points of the rth dilation of delta G correspond to a basis of the space of sections which is isomorphic to this highest weight representation where this is a fundamental weight. Okay, so there's kind of a representation theoretic significance. Let's see, and I should also say that polytopes obtained by tropicalizing the superpotential.
I guess this is where you're using that device. I've sort of never seen a model. Sorry, I've never seen an A model with a divisor marked.
Yeah, so here we need it in order to define our Newton-Okunkov body. Let's see. Oh yeah, and I wanted to say that some similar polytopes obtained by tropicalizing superpotentials appear in Goncharov-Shen and Gross, Hacking, Kiel, and Kuncevich. Okay. Okay, and now the theorem. The theorem is that the two polytopes we get on either side coincide. So delta G is QG. And we can also, I'll also mention another theorem, which is we can give an explicit combinatorial formula for all the lattice points of the polytope as well. Okay, so that's kind of the overview. Are there any questions about the overview before I start actually defining stuff?
How much, like, for instance, this type of theorem with these constructions, is it like supposed to be general in the sense of mere symmetry, or how much is special to this set?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So we have not seen this polytope appear in mirror symmetry before. We've seen this one, but haven't seen this one. So it's not like predicted by mirror symmetry per se. We expect it should be generalizable. I don't know precisely in what setting. Perhaps in a setting where the full Fock-Goncharov conjecture holds. Yeah. Okay. All right, so now I'm going to start defining everything carefully. Okay. So first let me define these combinatorial gadgets called playback graphs. So these first came up in the work of Alex Postnikov. So this is a planar graph G in a disk with n boundary vertices labeled 1 through n in order. We want to make a convention that each boundary vertex is incident to a unique edge, and internal vertices are going to be white or black. And okay, so let me give a slightly bigger example. Okay, so this is an example of a playback graph. Sometimes people make the convention that the graph must be bipartite, but for now, I don't really care whether it is or not. Okay, so now I want to explain how to get a permutation invariant of, well, okay, attach a permutation to such a graph. So this is sort of a definition slash lemma that sometimes goes by the name rules of the road or zigzag paths. And the rule is you turn right at, say, a solid vertex and left at a hollow vertex. That's a way to, those are rules for traveling through the graph. So given G, the trip T sub I starts at I and follows the rules to end at another vertex pi g of I. So let's record where all the trips go. So if I start at 1, I'll walk out here, go left, right, left, and left to 3. If I start at 2, I go out here, turn right, right, to 4. Start at 3, go left, to 5. Start at 4, we go right, left, to 1. We start at 5, we go left, right, to 2. And as you can see in this example, this defines a permutation, which we call pi g. Okay? And we'll say that g has type kn if it has k times n minus k plus 1 total regions. Here this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And if the permutation is precisely the one that takes 1 to n minus k plus 1, 2 to n minus k plus 2, and so on, k up to n, and then it wraps around so that n goes to n minus k. So these are the graphs that we'll care about. There are graphs with other permutations. There should be a story for them, but for now, but in this talk, we only care about these ones. Okay. And now I'm going to describe a way to associate k element subsets of 1 through n to all the regions here. And these are going to give us parameters in our network and cluster charts. So now, given such a G, we use trips T sub I to label faces, or I guess I previously called them regions, but I'll refer to these things as both regions and faces, by partitions contained in a n minus k by k rectangle. And so how does it work? Well, a given trip T sub I divides G into two parts, the regions to the left of T sub I and those on the right. So I'm going to put an I in each region on the left. So if we start at 1, then our trip turns left, right, left, left, just like this. And everything on the left means these regions. And now if I start at 2, I go right, left, right, left, right. So it's this path, and everything to the left means this, 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 and this, and so on. And if I keep going, I'll get a 1, 5 here, 4, 5, 2, 5, 2, 4, 2, 3, and 3, 4. And now, oh, here I should have said, in this example, this is a graph of type k, n, where k is 3 and n is 5. And now, so my n minus k by k rectangle is a 2 by 3 rectangle. And if I now identify these subsets with vertical steps of partitions, then, for example, this 1, 2, that means I'm looking at a partition with vertical steps like this. This gets identified with the partition like this. 2, 3 is this partition. 3, 4 is this one. 4, 5 is the empty set. 1, 5 is this. 2, 4 is this partition. And 2, 5 is this partition, if I've done everything right. Okay. So now I want to explain how you get a network chart out of this graph, which you can think of as a way to parameterize x. Okay, I guess I should redraw my picture. This was this. Okay. And the network chart that I'm writing down was given by Postnikov. Okay, so we're going to put a variable x mu in the region, although actually the way I'm presenting it comes from a theorem of Talaska. Okay. So we put a variable x mu in the region labeled mu. And now I'm going to choose a particular orientation of my graph called a perfect orientation. O of g, with the source set 1 through n minus k. So what's a perfect orientation? It's going to be a way of giving an orientation to every graph such that every solid vertex has a unique outgoing edge, and every hollow vertex has a unique ingoing edge. So, for example, if I choose 1 and 2 as my source set, now this hollow must have a unique ingoing, so these had better be outgoing. Now, solid has a unique outgoing, so this better be outgoing. This has a unique ingoing, so these need to be like this. This has unique outgoing, so it's like this. And in this case, I will be forced to arrive at this orientation. And now, this network chart is going to be a way to map C star to the N, which is the dimension of our Grassmannian, to the Grassmannian. And So I'm going to define, so it's going to be a parameterization of a dense open subset here. And I'm going to describe the image of the map based on what the Plucker coordinates are of points in the image. So I'll just give you a formula for all the Plucker coordinates in the image here. And there's a combinatorial formula in terms of flows. So this is going to be a generating function for flows, which are collections of non-intersecting paths. From the sources, which are 1 through n minus k, to j. So to figure out my jth Plucker coordinate, I need to look at all the ways I can route paths from the sources to capital J. So let me do a couple of examples. So, so what is P sub 1,4? This means we're going to be looking at flows from 1 and 2 to 1 and 4. So I'd better send 1 to itself and 2 to 4. So how do I send 2 to 4? I could take this path, or I could take this path. And so there's two paths from 2 to 4, and the weight of each path will be the product of variables to its left. So the weight of this path over here is the product of the parameters indexed by these partitions. And the weight of this path here will be the product of all three of the parameters corresponding to those partitions. So this is our formula for P1,4. So yeah, so I could take any other orientation, and the overall effect would be to rescale Plucker coordinates. Yeah. There's a way to do things in terms of matchings, but if you do things in terms of matchings, then it's much more natural to label edges rather than faces. And if you want to write down the weight in terms of faces, it's a little cumbersome. So I'm using this so I can use the face weighting, which has the right dimension. Okay, so so now I'm going to map. So I'm going to now define a valuation map on these expressions for flow coordinates, and I'm going to map a given expression for a Plucker coordinate to an integer lattice point in R capital N, obtained by choosing the leading, for me means lowest degree, term in Pj over P12. So I'll do a couple examples here. So I could start with a sort of a trivial example. P12 will represent flows from 1,2 to 1,2. And so there's only the trivial flow, which gets weight 1. P14, we just computed, and it's this times 1 plus x to 1. Maybe I'll do one more. P3-4, to calculate P3-4, we'd look at flows from 1 and 4 to 3 and 4. So 4 had better go to 4, and then 1 goes to 3. And yeah, maybe, oh, is there only one way to do it here? Yeah, just one way to do it. And that would have weight. One, oh, because they'll, one go to, oh yeah, yes, perfect, yeah. So exactly, we want 1 and 2 to go to 3 and 4. So 2 had better go to 3, and 1 had better go to 4. So 2 will go like this, and 1 will go to 4 like this. And now the weight of this pair of paths is the product of the weights of the individual paths. And so we're going to get this squared, because it's to the left of both paths, times this, times this, times this, times this. Yeah. Okay, and now I want to map these to integer lattice points by looking at the leading term and taking its exponent vector. So it's a theorem you can prove that these polynomials always have the form monomial times a polynomial with constant term 1. So there's always going to be this leading term that divides all other terms. And its exponent vector is our valuation. So for example, So we have all of these coordinates. Yeah. And for example, val g will map P14 to the exponent vector of the leading term, which is 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. Now, based on our conventions, the empty set's never going to appear in any formula. So in fact, that's going to get ignored, and this is R capital N, as we wanted. Okay. Okay, so, all right, so now I can finally define what's our Newton-Okunkov body here. So I'll let L sub R be the space of sections for this divisor, which you can think about as the span, the linear span of all, well, just degree R polynomials in Pflücker coordinates. So any Pflücker coordinate and any polynomial in Pflücker coordinates can be written in terms of these parameters, and we can apply val g to it. So then the Newton-Okunkov body is the following convex body. So we take Okay. So it's going to be a union as r goes from 1 to infinity of 1 over r val g of lr minus 0. Okay, so let me just say in words. What you do to compute it is for every r, you need to look at L sub r. This is your span of degree r monomials and Plucker coordinates. You apply val g to get an integer lattice point. You do this rescaling to account for the fact that this was LR. And then you take the convex hull of all these points. This is the Newton-Okuncoff body. And by the way, if you started with a polytope, any polytope whatsoever, well, I don't know if this is helpful or not, but just as a remark, given any polytope Q, you can write Q as the convex hull of one over R times, say, the lattice points in the Rth dilation. What do I want to say here? Let me ignore this remark since I'm a little short on time. But any questions about this definition?
It's like the classic data for which you're saying you can define that information.
Yeah, that's a good question. So you need some kind of parameterization of your variety and some kind of valuation. Those are kind of the basic ingredients. Yeah. Okay, so let me give a first result, which is a combinatorial formula for all lattice points of this polytope. Yeah, there's some nice papers by Cave and Kovansky on Newton-Okuncoff bodies, if you want just some kind of general background. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's one of our results, which is that the lattice points of delta G of D are precisely valuations of the Plucker coordinates val g of p lambda for all lambda contained in an n minus k by k rectangle. So you get precisely the Plucker coordinates and nothing more. And we have an explicit formula. So if mu labels, so for mu, a face label of G, the muth coordinate of val g of p lambda. So val g of p lambda is some lattice point indexed whose coordinates are indexed by face labels of g. And now I'm telling you what is the muth coordinate. It is precisely the maximum diagonal, the length of the maximum diagonal of the skew partition mu take away lambda. So as an example, val g of this Plucker coordinate, if I look in this coordinate, is the max diagonal of this minus this. So I'm taking away these boxes, and what's left if you look at any diagonal with slope minus 1, that maximum length is 1. And this formula, we found out, is involved in the formula for the multiplication of the quantum cohomology ring of the Grassmannian. So that's kind of interesting. It came up in a formula of Fulton and Woodward. Okay, so any questions before I say a few things about the B-model side? Yes. So you take both partitions and you align them so that their top left corners coincide. You look at the set theoretic difference. That's some skew partition. And now you look at every diagonal with slope minus 1 and look at the maximum length.
It's possible that neither is contained in the other.
That's right. That's possible. Yeah. One thing I'll say that we found nice about this formula is that the formula actually doesn't have to do with anything to do with G. Like, the only way that G came in to this formula was determining the particular labels of the faces. Okay, so now let me say something about the B model side. And again, we're going to be using the same graph as before, but interpreting it as a cluster chart instead of a network chart. And now our map is going to take P mu to phi g check of p mu given by, the point is that each point on, so the, okay, I'll just say, each Pluhar coordinate is uniquely expressed as a Laurent polynomial in the Pluhar coordinates P mu, where mu a face of G. So if I want to give a parameterization of the Grassmannian, it's enough to just specify what are the values of these Pluhar coordinates, and that determines the rest. So that's coming from the fact that Scott proved that the Grassmannian has a cluster algebra structure. Okay, now the B model involves the superpotential. So I'll just write down what it is. I'll write it down in an example, and then it'll be reasonably clear how to generalize it. So when x check is essentially GR3, 5 with that anti-canonical divisor removed, then W is the following. So I'm writing it as a Laurent polynomial, and the different denominators that appear will be precisely the boundary labels, the labels that come around the boundary. And the things that I get on top are obtained from the bottom by adding a box in the unique way. So if I add a box over here, I get this. If I add a box to this partition, I'll get this. If If I add a box here, I'll get this. If I add a box here, I'll get this. And then you have to kind of, if you add a box here, that's like removing a rim hook. And this is going to be like removing the whole border. And then we're going to put a queue to keep track of what we did. Okay, and this kind of operation of removing a box is analogous to a Pierre rule in the quantum cohomology. Okay, so now we want to, so now for a fixed G, we can rewrite W in terms of P mu, where mu, a face of G. And it'll still be a Laurent polynomial. So if we were to do that for our particular choice of G, or G naught, we get, I'll just write out the first few terms. Oh, and we're going to set P empty set to be 1. We'll take that normalization. So we get, these are some of the terms we get. Plus Q times this over this, plus, and so on. And now, so it has more terms I didn't write. And now to get our Q polytope, we're going to tropicalize W. And basically, I'm going to take every Laurent monomial and associate the natural inequality. So this one would give me this greater than or equal to 0. This one would give me this minus this. This, so my Q, I'll tropicalize and get 1. And so on. And this gives an inequality description of a polytope we call QG. And so now I've defined everything, and that's the theorem. and I should say, for a particular choice of G, we will indeed get a Gelfand-Seltland polytope for the Grassmannian. And let's see, I think I have 5 minutes left, so I'm going to do a tiny, tiny example where we can compute everything, and you can see it's true. Okay, so here's the example. K is 2, N is 3. So X is the Grassmannian of 1 planes in 3 space, and X check is the Grassmannian of 2 planes in C3. And our G is going to be this simple graph with labels empty set, box, and 2. And so in the A model, we're going to have a network chart obtained by choosing a perfect orientation. So our network chart, so okay, I need to write down my expressions for Pluhar coordinates. P sub 1 means flows from 1 to itself. And there's only the sort of trivial one. P2 means flows from 1 to 2. So that's this path, which gets weight x2. P3 means flows from 1 to 3, which gets weights the product of these. And then when I map this to the valuations, so I will get the following lattice points, 0, 0 for 1. This gets the lattice point 0, 1. This gets the lattice point 1, 2. So I have 3 lattice points. And let me draw my picture. The convex hull gives this triangle. And now for the B model, the superpotential is P box over P empty set plus Q P empty set over P2 plus P2 over P1. And we're setting P empty set to be 1. So this gives P box plus Q over P2 plus P2 over P1. And if I tropicalize, I get the inequalities. This is negative 1 minus this is greater than or equal to 0, and this minus this is greater than or equal to 0. And this tells me this is this facet of the polytope. And this one says, gives this facet, and this gives this facet. So it's true for projective space of dimension 2. So I will stop there. Oh gosh. Thank you. Thanks.
So you define all this data kind of for each G?
For each G.
Is it sort of, if you chose slightly different G, is there some kind of rules relating them?
Yeah, it's like a tropical mutation rule. Exactly. Yeah, it's precisely the tropicalization of the usual cluster mutation. Yeah.
Is there something that's kind of invariant under that? Which is sort of just a reflection of the underlying variety? If I sort of wanted to match this up with mirror symmetry for these guys, maybe ask what part of mirror symmetry factors through this result about matching these kind of combinatorially defined polytopes that you
Can you make that a little more specific?
Sure, yeah. So if you forgot the variety and all you got was an assignment rule that assigned to each of these type kn graphs, polytope.
Oh, could you reconstruct?
What aspects of mirror symmetry can factor through this assignment rule?
You mean what? So like what you could read off from the polytope, or
the family of polytopes over G.
I guess maybe the best thing to look at would be like a basis for the sections. It follows from kind of the general framework of Newton-Okunkov bodies that the lattice points will index bases for spaces of sections. So that to me seems like the main thing that's invariant. Like your expressions for the elements would vary as you change your cluster, but the elements should be the same.
Maybe invariant is, but like a couple of times you mentioned quantum cohomology ring, is it clear that if you just know this assignment rule of polytopes to graphs, you can get the quantum cohomology?
Yeah, I'm not sure. So the specific, this formula gets a little bit of the structure of quantum cohomology. What it gets precisely, what it has to do with precisely is the multiplication of two quantum Schubert classes, and then when you expand it in the basis, this number appears as like the minimal power of Q on the right-hand side. So that's not going to be enough to reconstruct the whole thing. It's kind of a little piece of it. On the other hand, I think there's work by Valery Kirichenko that has to do with trying to read off quantum cohomology from polytopes, maybe Newton-Okunkov bodies or special cases of them. So, yeah. So there might be a way to do it.
As a sort of standard in mirror symmetry, you gave us these two different mirror Calabi-Yaus, and you decided to sort of just use one for on the A set and the other.
Oh, so we think we could flip everything, and it should still be.
I mean, there's like an obvious thing with if there's an asymmetry and K goes to N minus K. But is there anything to like, if you ran both the A and B sides simultaneously on the same Meissonian, do they play off each other? Like, do they sort of differ coordinates?
Oh. I think it makes more sense for the mirror symmetry to relate the K to the N minus K.
Sure. I mean, the mirror symmetry would relate the K.
Right.
But I think I'm trying to ask, like, if I didn't know about N minus K and only cared about the K, then it has like a complex geometry and a symplectic geometry.
Uh-huh.
And you're presumably picking up different aspects of those. Do you see like Kähler geometry in their interactions or anything like that?
I don't know, but I don't think about Kähler geometry. So
I have another question, which is you mentioned a couple times these like highest weight modules. I assume you mean for the like affine SL something.
Yeah.
But I didn't catch what they were.
No. For a special case of RG, we would get literally highest weight representations for GLN for fundamental weights and multiples of it. Right.
Okay.
Right. Right. So like for a particular G, R delta G would be essentially a Gelfond-Setlin polytope. Having to do with the weight like 1111000, whatever, k and n minus k. And then dilations of this would have to do with dilations of that.
So then, like, I think I want to ask, is there a conformal field theory way to tell this story?
I don't know. Yeah.
Because one of the places that highest weight modules show up is as like vacuum or as modules anyway for anyway, I don't have a particular question.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be cool if you could do something like that.
Does this mutation you mentioned having the choice of G in this case have any representation theoretically?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know.
Any more questions? If not, let's thank Lauren again.